Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. This is the podcast for February 27th, 2009. During our last podcast, we celebrated the birthday of Charles Darwin, and now we've got more stories about evolution for you. We're going to delve deep into the roots of human nature and the origins of our conscience. We'll tell you how longer lives helped the human population to grow to the size it is today. And we'll get a report from Justin Warner about the giant snake fossil found in South America that paleontologists have been buzzing about. But first, Suzanne's chatted with a scientist who says we've been ignoring the evolutionary roots of our own morality for far too long. Suzanne, what's this all about?
Well, we tend to think of morality as a purely cultural institution, something that we humans have imposed on ourselves to put our savage nature in check. But historian and philosopher of biology Douglas Alchin of the University of Minnesota says morality and nature aren't incompatible at all, and we disregard the connections between the two at our peril.
The ways in which we perceive evolution and natural selection in our society is kind of like reality TV shows, Survivor, survival of the fittest, competition. And under those frameworks, we just can't imagine how morality might evolve or how we as humans might be moral. So trying to tease out those problems and give us a sense about how it is that we are indeed moral, given our natural history, is really important to our understanding. I think it's particularly significant because a lot of critics of evolution make their criticisms based on what they perceive as moral hedonism, that evolution leads inevitably to social anarchy and the abandonment of morality. And that just doesn't follow at all. So trying to come to understand who we are morally is part of being scientifically literate, I think.
He says Charles Darwin devoted a great deal of thought to the roots of human nature.
In 1838, he began to speculate about species diverging. But he starts speculating about the origin of morality in humans even before he has developed the concept of natural selection to explain the change of species. So that was 2 decades before he publishes The Origin of Species.
Alchin believes that schools should think about integrating the origins of human nature into their curricula.
Chief among our goals in teaching biology is understanding who we are, and who we are is centered around our mental and intellectual capabilities, and in particular, moral behavior. So if we don't explain that, if we don't teach about it, we haven't done our job in talking about humans and who we are.
One hypothesis to explain how we evolved into moral beings comes from cultural anthropologist Chris Bohm of the University of Southern California. He thinks having a conscience helped ancient humans survive by hunting together.
Large game obliges one to divide the meat out in a fairly equalitarian manner. That is, hunters of large game cannot simply keep the kill for themselves because they would starve to death as well as everyone else. You need to share the meat so as to equalize the input of this very highly nutritious material. As a result, human groups were obliged to impose rules about sharing and to reinforce them with strict punishment. And the hypothesis is that when humans began to limit the activities of alpha males and cheaters with the coming of large game hunting, individuals best able to cope with a very punitive and lethally punitive group were going to get ahead in terms of their genes being represented in future gene pools. So the conscience evolved as a mechanism for dealing with rules and dealing with rules more effectively than in the case of people that didn't have consciences.
In other words, those who cooperated the most survived, while cheaters were shunned and therefore less likely to pass on their genes.
Fascinating, Suzanne. Well, now we tend to think that only humans are capable of morality, or immorality for that matter, but many scientists think the roots of fairness and altruism go back even further than human prehistory, because some of our primate relatives share some of these behaviors. Biologist Franz Duval of Emory University explains.
We have evidence for empathy in primates, we have evidence for reciprocity, so deal-making between individuals, we have evidence for pro-social tendencies, doing things without you getting any benefits out of it. And we have evidence for fairness principles, that they're interested in fair distributions and that they object to unfair distributions.
He says this has been documented in both chimpanzees and capuchin monkeys. In experiments where two primates were given cucumbers for doing a simple task, he says they both did the task readily. But if one received a much tastier grape instead, the other protested the unfair treatment and stopped performing the task.
The one who gets cucumber all of a sudden doesn't want to perform the task anymore. He goes into protest mode. He throws the cucumbers out of his cage, and he doesn't want to perform the task.
And in other experiments, the primates preferred to share food rewards instead of keeping them for themselves. Duval believes the roots of unselfish behavior in humans evolved in our primate ancestors.
And I think what we've done in our moral systems, we have taken them a step further. Our morality goes beyond these tendencies. But we could never have developed human morality without this kind of basic psychology that we share with other primates. And Darwin did believe that there was continuity between what he called the social instincts of other animals, the social instincts and human morality.
So Suzanne, what other animals do you see moral behavior in?
Well, Douglas Alchin, the University of Minnesota researcher I mentioned earlier, says rhesus monkeys also have a sense of justice.
There have been studies of macaques, or rhesus monkeys, on an island off Puerto Rico. And we see them exercising punishment strategies that keep the system of sharing food in check.
And fairness and justice aren't restricted to just primates either. Vampire bats might be the last species you'd think would fit this description, but Alchin says you'd be surprised.
They just strike you as like, how can you get morality in vampire bats, of all things? But they have a system of cooperation, and it's enforced basically with a tit-for-tat system. So if they go out in a particular evening and they don't get blood, they're in danger of not surviving. But they can go and beg to a neighbor, who will then regurgitate a little bit of blood and keep them going for another night. And sooner or later, the system gets reversed, and the other bat now, it was the donor, is in short supply, and he goes begging again. But you can imagine that there's this whole system of cheating, which is the unschooled notion of natural selection. It's like, well, everybody's just selfish, so they're just going to, like, go beg and never go out and share their own. And in this case, the bats remember, and they recognize individuals, and they tend not to reciprocate to those individuals who have not reciprocated to them. And so what you see is this social system enforcing morality, and that focuses the attention not just on the individual, but on the social context.
To learn more about this subject and to access educational resources for the classroom, visit www.evolutionofmorality.net.
Thanks, Suzanne. We'll switch gears now and head much farther back in time to the land of giant snakes. Our Science Update correspondent Justin Warner has the story.
Scientists recently found the vertebrae from a 60-million-year-old giant snake in Colombia. Based on the bone size, the mega constrictor weighed over a ton, was as long as a school bus, and would have had trouble squeezing through a standard door frame. But aside from the wow factor, the snake's gargantuan size also tells us about the climate at the time. Paleontologist Jonathan Block of the Florida Museum of Natural History at the University of Florida explains that cold-blooded animals depend on ambient heat for their metabolism. The bigger the animal, the more heat you need.
We believe that snakes that are living in the warmest climates today are as large as they can get for the temperature that they live at, and that in order to make a larger snake, you have to increase the mean annual temperature.
Block's team calculated that Colombia, which sits on the equator, must have been 10 degrees warmer back then than it is today in order to support a snake that size. He says that's surprising, even though the planet as a whole was definitely warmer 60 million years ago.
For example, we have palms and crocodiles in the Arctic during that time, so we knew that the Earth was warmer. But it's been suggested that during warmer times, that perhaps the tropics were not that much warmer than today, so it was only warmer at higher latitudes up towards the Arctic. And so what our findings show is that, in fact, the tropics were warmer during these globally warm intervals.
Which also suggests that our current warming trend could heat up the tropics more than we expected.
Thanks, Justin. Well, finally today, Suzanne's going to tell you how grandparents have profoundly affected our evolution and the course of human history.
Grandparents are an important part of our lives, but it hasn't always been that way. For instance, our close relatives, the Neanderthals, didn't live long enough to become grandparents. And neither did we until about 30,000 years ago. Central Michigan University anthropologist Rachel Caspari says that people started living longer, for reasons that aren't fully understood. And with grandparents around to help raise grandchildren, our population soared.
Grandparents are important, and grandmothers very important, because they contribute so much to the well-being of their children and grandchildren. And if you look at hunter-gathering societies, people who are post-reproduction still contribute to the economic well-being of their societies, and in fact continue to contribute often for a significant number of years. And some people have suggested that these older folks are what is necessary to keep those societies going. And so these shared resources are very important if you're going to have increased numbers of children and increased numbers of grandchildren, and old people really are important in these societies.
She says older people also served as conduits for important cultural information that allowed for the success of human societies, such as how to find food or avoid predators. Not only that, the increase in the population allowed creativity to flourish.
And what's so cool is that you start to see a huge increase in the number of people who could be grandparents that coincide with a time when you see an artistic explosion, basically, in the record.
Perhaps this perspective will give people a renewed respect for their elders.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, we'll have many more thought-provoking stories for you, from the devastating health effects of loneliness to caterpillars that pretend to be ants. Until then, check out our Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got a thrilling new science story for you every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Or if you're on the go, you can also listen in by calling 1-512-499-2149. And if you have a science question you'd like to hear answered on the show, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.